Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll get a legislative update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, check in with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull soldiers from Kuwait, and learn about the VA Health Chat program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
This month marks the beginning of LGBT Pride Month. Over the last decade, our military has moved toward accepting all service members into our ranks, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. We're becoming a much more inclusive force, and your Minnesota National Guard exemplifies this. It is important to us as a community-based organization that we reflect the communities we serve, our society, and the cultures that we come from. We are stronger as an organization when we are inclusive and diverse. We must allow anyone who's willing and able to serve their country the opportunity to do so. We cannot deny them their patriotism. We cannot deny them their love of country. As we do with other heritage and cultural recognition months, let us celebrate the contributions that LGBT soldiers and airmen bring to our Minnesota National Guard.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Ben Johnson, who currently serves as the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ben, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Ben, every year about this time, we get you back in the studio and we try to figure out what happened at the state legislature in the first few months of this year. Did you put a lot of hours in there again?
As with every year, we're there almost 24/7, especially the last month or so when they really get down to brass tacks. We put a lot of time and effort into making sure they're doing the right things.
All right, we're going to get into that in a little bit, but I want to talk first about you spent a few years in the United States Navy.
I did. I spent 6 years on active duty.
And a couple of deployments?
I did three total deployments. I did one on board a destroyer and then two more as a member of a mobile security team.
And you were over in the North Persian Gulf area and in the Straits of Hormuz and the Northern Indian Ocean. Was that, sounds like you joined the Navy and did get to see the world.
I absolutely did. It was a really, actually a great experience. After the first deployment on the destroyer, which was Central and South America, then things ramped up in the Middle East. And so we were over there providing security on some Iraqi oil infrastructure and then doing transits of coalition warships, doing point security, and really did get to see a lot of that part of the world.
Sounds fascinating. Now, Ben, how and when did you get to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
I've been with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about 5 years now. Came out of active duty service and spent some time in law school, finished that up, and decided that I wanted to continue to serve in some capacity, and veterans was something that I was pretty passionate about. So I came over and started working in the programs and services team, and after a few months of that, had the opportunity to move into the legislative office.
And I'll bet that experience in law school serves you well when you're over there looking at some of the bills and some of the things happening in the state legislature.
It really did. That experience and the work with developing policy and trying to figure out what legislators would like to accomplish, working with them, having that to lean on, that past experience to lean on, has been really helpful.
That and all those years in the Navy, now I can call you Navy Ben, put you in a good place where you're probably over there and you care passionately about veterans' issues.
I think the legislators certainly appreciate someone who has experienced it, and they have a little more trust speaking with someone who actually stood up and said, I'm willing to serve.
Now, Ben, I'm curious. We have a new governor this year, and we always have some new legislatures up there. How did it go? Did they? I can only see from a distance. We had a House divided from a Senate, and, of course, we've got a veteran in the governor's office. Veterans Affairs, Military Affairs, was this a positive, or was it a tough session?
Well, it was a tough session for a lot of people, but I think the experience of the governor and having the divided legislature, both sides and both House and Senate chambers were interested in serving veterans and making sure that the veterans in the state of Minnesota are taken care of. So it was one of those areas of really broad bipartisan support. And so I think it actually came out pretty well for us.
Ben, we see and hear, and we had some guests on the Memorial Day show from Congress, and they tell us that when they're dealing with veterans' issues and trying to take care of our veterans, that the parties come together and they work together, and it's not as political, it's not as tough. Is it the same in the state?
I would say absolutely. We have members of both the House and Senate Veterans Committees who are former service members or currently serving. So they bring that perspective to it, and most of them advise, you know, leave your politics at the door. Our goal in those committees and then throughout the session is to serve Minnesota's veterans and their families, and they do a really good job of taking the politics out of that.
So, Ben, one of the things that you need to deal with every year is the budget for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We've got all of these 370 some thousand veterans in Minnesota that you and all the rest of the great people at the MDVA have to take care of. How did that budget process go, and how did it turn out?
Well, we started developing our budget requests last year before the election even took place. And the guidance we were given from the previous administration was be ready to provide the new administration with the best information possible. Tell them what your programs are, what you're working on, what you need. So we established that budget and then made our pitch to Governor Walz and his team, went through that process, and they approved them, and he included it in his budget proposal to the legislature. Then working through the legislative process, we were able to brief both the House and Senate and let them know what we needed, some areas where we thought we could use some more funding to better better serve our veterans. And working through that process, in the end, we were able to secure both our base budget, which meant no cuts to the agency's base funding, but we were also able to identify three areas of importance where we thought additional resources would be necessary. And they came through for us and funded all three of our additional requests.
We're speaking with Ben Johnson, who currently serves as the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Ben, a couple of years ago, I saw you over there because I was over testifying on some issues, and I was reminded that our state legislators put in long hours serving on those committees, and I know that you spent quite a few days over there testifying about veterans issues and about your budget and all of those things. Did that go relatively smooth this year, or was it just like every year, you just got to put in the time? And I wish that all of our people could see how hard our state legislators work. They put in a lot of time and effort.
They really do, and it actually went smoothly this year and most years because they're very interested in hearing about veterans' concerns. One of my primary responsibilities is communicating to the legislators about what's going on in greater Minnesota. So we do a lot of outreach with our communities, trying to understand what the needs are, and then my job is to communicate with them, and they are genuinely interested in hearing about that, hearing about the concerns and issues from our veterans throughout the state.
So you actually spend a lot of time testifying over there and then going back to the office and reporting to the commissioner and your other partners, and then back over you go.
That's absolutely right. The communication is key, making sure that everyone's on the same page and that we're able to explain what the need is and hopefully convince them that it's a worthwhile endeavor.
And quite often you have the commanders from our veteran service organizations and collectively the commander's task force over there with you because they're called upon to testify as well.
Absolutely. The Minnesota Commander's Task Force is nine of the largest veteran service organizations in the state of Minnesota. We've got the state commanders and their adjutants working hand in hand with us, and we really rely on their perspective. And there's some great initiatives that have been pushed heavily by groups from that organization that this year came to fruition. We're really excited about the work that they are able to do behind the scenes. I can only be so many places at once, so their support and their active participation is key.
And Commissioner Herkey and Commissioner Shelito before him refer to the Commander's Task Force as their kind of board of directors because they come together and they kind of define some of the veterans' issues that we want to work on from year to year.
Absolutely. My comment earlier about getting input from veterans across the state, one of our key boots on the ground, so to speak, is those posts and members from all over the state that are members of these organizations telling their leadership what's important to them, and they're able to funnel that to me. And then it goes the other way as well, that I'm able to put out information about what happened or didn't happen, and they can disseminate it throughout the state. So it really is a network of coverage that's pretty incredible.
And a close partnership with all those organizations.
Absolutely.
Ben, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the recent legislative session that ended here in Minnesota. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Ben Johnson, who serves as the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, about the recent legislative session that just ended. And, Ben, one of the things that happens every year is the Commander's Task Force and those veteran service organizations that that you talk to and work with occasionally puts on an event called Veterans Day on the Hill And I think the last two or three years, we've had a lot of veterans from all over Minnesota have an opportunity to come over to the Capitol and meet with their elected officials.
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with the Commander's Task Force, the United Veterans Legislative Council, and the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers to organize an event where we bring in veterans from across the state and their families so that they can sit down and have a conversation with their elected officials about what's important to them, highlight pieces of legislation that they'd like to see passed, and really rally and show a public display of how important veterans' issues are to the state of Minnesota.
And it was another really big day this year.
It was. We had a great turnout. It started with an event down at the Armory on the National Guard Armory. We were able to then march up from the Veterans Services Building to the Capitol. We had the governor as one of the keynote speakers, was able to rally the troops, as it were. It was a great program, very well attended. We had a very nice day. Fantastic.
And Ben, one of the issues that I know that the Commander's Task Force has been working on for a couple of years was a thing called the Homestead Market Exclusion. And for our listeners out there, if a veteran has a certain disability rating, they get a break on their real estate taxes. And under the previous law, if that veteran died, that exclusion only lasted for a short period of years, and then it went away. And the spouse, who doesn't get a raise when that happens, all of a sudden has to deal with higher real estate taxes. And we got that carried this year, didn't we?
We did. We did. So to your point, the Commander's Task Force, and in particular those folks from the DAV, have put a ton of work in over the last 4 years to getting that 8-year limit eliminated. As it is, a veteran who passes away, the spouse is only able to enjoy that market value exclusion for up to 8 years following that. But her financial situation actually gets worse when his or her spouse passes away. And so the cost of the taxes that they're paying after 8 years becomes prohibitive, and most of them would lose the home that they've been living in. What we were able to get done this year at the legislature with broad support was an elimination of that 8 years, so that so long as the surviving spouse lives in the home and this and her circumstances or his circumstances don't change, they can continue to enjoy that property tax break.
Well, I'm glad to hear that we can keep the spouses of our veterans in their homes for as long as possible, because it's proven they're going to live longer and they're going to have a better and more full life. So that was a great piece of work done. Now, Ben, I understand that the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley had a bigger presence on the Capitol this year. What was that about? What was going on there?
Well, the folks from the museum were pursuing a couple of different pieces of legislation. One, they're looking at securing some capital money to improve and maybe move the museum off of the Camp Ripley site, get it more accessible to more people. That was not successful, but what they were able to secure was funding to expand and develop develop the Vesey collection, which they recently came into ownership of. And so they'll be spending money and time to go through and catalog and make sure that everything from General Vesey's collection is able to be displayed to the public. The other portion of it is to expand a program that is the post 9/11. So the 20th anniversary of September 11th is coming up, and the museum would like to start collecting stories and information about the experiences over the last two decades, so that when the 20th anniversary happens, they can display that and disseminate it, get it out to the people of the state to understand what our communities and service members and their families have been doing for the last 20 years.
Well, the Minnesota Military Museum on Camp Ripley is a great place, and I'd encourage all of our listeners to stop by there when they're on their way up north to the cabins this year. We're speaking with Ben Johnson, the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, on Minnesota Military Radio. Ben, a lot of people in Minnesota think that the Veterans Service Center out at the airport is part of the USO. It's not. It's an independent foundation. It's been there it was there when I went to Vietnam, and it's still there. They haven't closed their door one day. They're going to move that from outside security, inside security, and I understand the state legislature's going to help them with that.
That's correct. The state legislature approved a one-time funding of $100,000 that'll be facilitated through the Department of Veterans Affairs. And that money is going to be utilized to furnish the new space. It's going to be a much larger space, more access, more rooms, and so the money will be used to purchase furniture and beds and make sure that those members of our armed services who are traveling and the retirees who access the service center have the best accommodations that they can.
Very good. I was glad to hear that, and we're going to try to do a show from out at the airport after they move that and try to support them. It's a great place for our service members while they're passing through the airport. Ben, last year, we got a couple things done. The state legislature approved some three new homes in Minnesota, and I think we got some money to repair the bridge out by the veterans' home. Were there any follow-up activities necessary this year on either of those issues?
Well, we're continuing to work with our partners throughout the state to develop the applications for the federal matching money for the three new veterans' homes that we're pursuing. We were able to submit applications to the federal VA back in late March, and so now the process is developing construction plans and going through the process of submitting any final documents necessary so that we're on the list to be considered for the federal matching money. The bridge at the Minneapolis campus is a continuing issue. We're working on it. We ran into some trouble late last year, early this year, with the repairs that have been done. The steel is 100 years old, and the current techniques for repairing bridges don't necessarily mesh well with that vintage of steel. So we're continuing to work with our partners over at the Department of Administration and their partners and subcontractors to get that addressed. But we are doing our due diligence, and we hope to be wrapping that project up either later this year or early next year.
Ben, it seems like at the end of every legislative session, there's a mad rush at the end to get everything done. And this year, like other years, we had to call a special session. Did that impact any veterans' issues? How did that impact citizens of Minnesota, our veterans?
Well, as we were talking about earlier, they went through the process, and I had an opportunity to testify in front of these committees, and they were doing their work. I think it's a misnomer to say that they sat on their hands or didn't do something all session, because most everything that ended up in the final bills that the governor signed last week were things that went through the committee processes and were considered and debated. So it is always a mad rush at the end because they're attempting to do all of the best work that they can. So they adjourned without finishing all of their work on May the 20th. But then they spent the interim week going over everything that had been discussed, and they were negotiating, making sure that all sides were at the table. Again, there was some discussion about things being done behind closed doors. Well, most everything that was being considered was stuff that had been through the process and was considered by the full bodies of both the House and Senate. So
vetted and approved, and it was just a matter of cleaning it up.
Correct. And it's a challenge because there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of reading that needs to be done in a very short amount of time. But in the end, they got through everything. And I think I read that for the first time since 1978, all of the bills that went to the governor's desk were signed. No vetoes this year, which means, again, the process is working.
Working, and we're hopeful it'll continue to work during Governor Walz's tenure. Ben, we just got about 2 minutes left. Every year there's some leftovers. Every year there's some things we have to carry over and get to next year. I'm sure we had some this year as well.
We did, and I'd like to highlight one in particular that was at the finish line and just didn't quite make it. It's a program called the Veterans Restorative Justice. It's a sentencing guideline that would expand the opportunity for courts in the state of Minnesota to deal with veterans who are dealing with criminal charges. This is not an expansion of veterans courts statewide because not all jurisdictions need a standing veterans court. But what it is a sentencing guideline where a veteran who's eligible for what's called probation, the judge would accept the plea, and they prove that they have a service connection related to the thing that they've been charged with. And they say, hey, I'd like to get some additional help, and I'm willing to go to the VA and get the mental health counseling that I need or the chemical dependency counseling that I need. And the judge will accept their plea and hold on to it. And they'll be sentenced to probation, where they'll work with the county veteran service officers and access VA programs. It's a really great thing. We think it would save money. The fiscal note is that you'd have less veterans ending up incarcerated, which costs a lot of money. You had to have less of these charges going all the way to trial, which would save some money. And what it does is it allows the veteran access to, you know, the carrot and the stick. And in this case, the carrot is we'll get you some help. The stick is if you don't complete your probation, then the charge sticks and then you've got that criminal record. So
it's important to mention that this isn't forgiveness. This is actually a harder role because you have to go get the help. You have to go get the treatment, and you still have to make amends for whatever the issue might have been.
That's absolutely correct.
But it helps in the long run. It could help the veteran that wants to go through that time and effort and then move on with his life and see what else he can do that's good.
Well, and it's a lot easier to go through life without a criminal conviction, and it's a lot better long term for the entire society that they're getting the help that they need through the VA. But to your point, yeah, it's not a free pass, and they can't go back again and again if they continue to screw up and continue to have issues. This isn't a free pass. It's an opportunity to better yourself if you're willing to do the work.
Ben, all in all, sounds like a good session and some great work that you did up there again. I'm looking forward to visiting with you this fall to find out what's on the agenda and see what we can do next year.
I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. That was Ben Johnson, the legislative director from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Coming up next, we speak with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull soldiers from Coit. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to check in with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls from Coit. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Today, I want to spend a few moments recognizing Father's Day across Minnesota. These dads might be veterans, they may be currently serving, returning home from deployment, or they may have suffered the loss of their own son or daughter in the service to this country. Whatever your situation, I want to thank you for the role that you have played in the lives of our children and our families across Minnesota. Actions speak volumes about love and commitment, and simply being there sets the example and grounds our children. This Father's Day, I encourage dads to spend time instilling the importance of service and volunteering to the community, to those in need, and to this country. This is a time to demonstrate to our children the power of serving others. Not only does it help our children grow and develop into generous and caring adults, it gives back. On behalf of everyone here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the 327,000 veterans across this great state, best wishes for a wonderful and meaningful day of celebration and fun on Father's Day.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now, all the way from Coit, we have our Red Bull 34th Infantry soldiers over there, and they've been deployed for most of the year. They're preparing to pack up and come home, and so they're coming down to the end of the deployment. We wanted to talk today about some unusual things that are going on the base, and joining me now is Holly Kofer, who's a civilian over in Coit with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls. Holly, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Holly, I understand you're part of the USO.
I am. I've been a part of the USO for about 6 years now, but this is my first time in Southwest Asia.
And how did you get involved with the USO?
I started as a volunteer. It was a way to honor my family, who's been serving in the military for generations. So started that route back in North Carolina.
And how did this opportunity come about to go to Coit and support our soldiers?
It's something I've wanted to do for a while. I enjoyed my time with my stateside USO, but it had been just under 6 years of I was in a Marine Corps community, so it was just under 6 years sending Marines and sailors overseas and then supporting their families while they were gone. And I just felt like it was time to see the other side, to truly I'm not going to get a full experience of what they're dealing with because I'm not out there in the field where they are, but I can get a better idea of what all the service members are going through being over here with them and learn how to support them better.
Holly, the last time I was over there, there was a USO tent that was air-conditioned and had some facilities there. Can you tell us about what you provide for our soldiers while they're deployed?
So we are a home away from home, and we're here for them. So every USO offers some key things. We have free Wi-Fi. We have lounge areas. We have free coffee, snacks. We have a movie room here at Camp Arishon. We also have a rec room. We have phones that they can call home for free, and they literally pick up the phone and dial just like they're at home, and we have free access to computers. And we offer programs. We try to offer a program every day. It's just a morale-boosting activity, something to take their mind off what they're doing in their daily jobs.
So my guess is a lot of soldiers stop into the USO facility every day.
They do. So here at Camp Arishon, we average about 1,000 visitors a day. We're one of the busiest USOs in the region. And that's because Camp Arishon serves as the gateway to the theater.
And what kind of hours do you keep over there?
We're open to the service members from 10 until 02, but the staff, we actually are here from 07 until 02.
So a lot of hours every day. And they can stop in and find some cool water and get in line and call home occasionally and like you say, a home away from home.
It is, and we're happy to do it. It's honestly a privilege to be out here, and I've had fun doing it. It's only been about 4 months, but it's been a blast.
And how long did you sign up for?
So to join the USO Southwest Asia team, each employee signs initially for a year. And then you have the option of renewing at 6-month intervals. So it really depends on the person and if and when they want to go home.
Well, very good. And I want to thank you for volunteering and providing all those great services to our soldiers. Now, I understand we've got another special soldier right there with you, Specialist Ashley Everett. Ashley, welcome to Minnesota
Hello.
Military Radio.
Hi, thank you.
Can you tell us what you what's your position? What do you do with the Red Bulls in Kuwait?
I am a 92 Golf, so I'm a culinary specialist.
And you're from right here in the Twin Cities?
Yep, born and raised.
Okay, now I think most of our listeners wouldn't think that while you're deployed to Kuwait and you've got a job to do and you're living in the desert and you're doing all these things, they might be a little surprised that you have an opportunity to volunteer.
Yeah, I spend all my extra free time around here, so I try to keep busy.
And so one of the things you're doing is volunteering with the USO?
Yep.
And how many hours have you done that, and what type of work do you do over there while you're volunteering?
I started volunteering about the first month I was here, and I did 200 hours within the first month, and then there is a service ribbon you can get at 500 hours, so I've been going for that, and I have about 70 hours left until I reach that goal.
Are you going to make it?
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
I'd hope so. Got a few weeks left, so it should be good.
We're speaking with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull soldiers from Kuwait on Minnesota Military Radio. And Sergeant or Specialist Everett, what are your plans? Are you getting excited about coming home? Things are winding down. You're starting to pack.
Yes, I am very nervous, though. There's a lot to deal with once we go home, but I'm very excited to go home and see my family.
And what are your plans when you do come home?
Go back to work and see my husband and my dogs. And I know my mom really misses me, so I'm excited for all that.
So you get reacquainted with your family and go back. Did you work at the post office? Is that right?
No, I work at the Coop in South St. Paul.
Okay. Would you have interest in working for the post office?
Yes, that is my goal. I applied there, so hopefully I'll get that job once I get home.
Very good. Now, this USO volunteerism that you're doing over there, is that going to carry over when you come home?
Yeah, I actually have an interest in applying once my contract with the military is up. So I am going to stay busy and see if there's anything I can do once I'm home to support the USO.
So you're a little bit under the influence of Holly Kofer because you like what she's doing and you want to go back and help, I would guess.
Yeah, I love it. It's really inspiring.
Holly, what have you done to this young specialist?
She is an absolute treasure. She does a lot here for the team. And we could not function without our volunteers. We are a nonprofit, so we rely very heavily on them. And the fact that they're here doing their job and volunteering in their off time says a lot about them, Ashley and the others as people and soldiers.
And how many soldiers besides Ashley volunteer with the USO?
That number fluctuates. I would say between 40 and 45 at the moment, but it does fluctuate depending on the rotation and what everyone's doing while they're here and while they're deployed.
So, Holly, I'd guess a big part of what you do at the USO is to help with morale and make sure that they can get those calls home and, as you say, have that home away from home.
It is. It's really an honor to be here and to take care of these men and women.
Specialist Everett, I want to congratulate you on your volunteerism over in the desert. I hope the rest of the deployment goes well and goes quickly, and I hope you reach that 500 hours so that you can get that award.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're speaking to our 34th Infantry Red Bull soldiers from Kuwait on Minnesota Military Radio. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk to another one of them and fill in a little more about some other volunteer opportunities over in Kuwait. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull soldiers from Kuwait. And joining us now is Sergeant Michael Harris, who's a paralegal with the 34th Infantry Division. Sergeant Harris, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Sergeant Harris, can you tell us what does a paralegal do in the desert over at the Camp Arifjan?
We do a little bit of everything. We assist attorneys and investigating officers on investigations. We help take statements from witnesses, people involved in actions, and prepare things for, you know, the outcome of a case, whether it's going to go to court or go to a board. So we're involved in a lot of different things, and then sometimes we assist soldiers and their families as well, executing powers of attorneys, getting documents notarized to take care of business back home.
Now, I understand you've spent quite a few years going to school, and your full-time work was as a corrections officer at Stillwater Prison?
That is correct. I've been at Stillwater since 2015, and I'm definitely one of those people who have continued to go to school throughout my adult life.
It looks like you've got several degrees. We're over at Normandale Community College, a Bachelor of Science in Management from the University of Minnesota, and a Master of Science in Criminal Justice from the University of Cincinnati. You've been around a little bit.
I have. I never would have believed that I would have finished grad school. It's not something that I, you know, even 5 or 6 years ago, if you'd asked me if I was going to be able to do something like that, I wouldn't have guessed.
So I'll bet if you're helping with some investigations over there, occasionally you get into some interesting topics, even in the desert.
Certainly do. My background's a little different because I'm not an attorney. I don't have a JD. My master's program's a little bit more in behavioral science side of it. So it's more applicable at the prison in my full-time position than the type of work I do here.
We've been talking a little bit today about volunteering while you're deployed. And I understand you kind of stumbled upon another opportunity to volunteer right there.
I did. One of the attorneys I work with, I was trying to get some shoes repaired, and there's an alteration shop here on the base that does uniforms, but they won't work on anything that requires special equipment. And it's just some hiking boots that I liked that were comfortable. And so one of the attorneys I work with, who also works at the state, she said, well, go to the Red Cross. They have, you know, they have everything there. And I was like, I didn't even make sense to me. I was like, the Red Cross typically takes emergency messages and they handle, you know, hospitalizations and deaths and things that happen back home. And I didn't realize that they operated a resiliency center and, you know, they have care packages and equipment and stuff, just like the USO typically does at a lot of bases.
So you found what you needed over there, and I understand you went back a second time, made use of the facility.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I had some interviews at work for a promotion, and so I was looking for a place I could, you know, conduct my interview and some privacy over the phone, and they were very gracious, and then I found out they had a kitchen, and you know, kind of the, it made me feel at home there, and that got me more involved. And that's how it all started back in November.
So now you're volunteering to help the Red Cross, and were you doing a little baking in the kitchen?
Yeah, I'm kind of a health nut, and our options here in the dining facility are rather limited. And so I forced myself to get creative and make desserts and put stuff out on the counter for the people who come in and make it feel at home for them as well.
So in addition to having the USO tent over there, the Red Cross provides a bit of relief as well.
Yeah, they kind of work hand in hand because it's a large, sprawling base. And so the USO is on one end of it and the Red Cross is on the other end of it. And so they kind of serve those two different communities in a similar way, although a little bit different.
Well, congratulations on finding the Red Cross and helping them to take care of our soldiers. Are you getting excited about packing up and getting ready to come home?
I am so excited to come home. I just finished my 500 hours last weekend of volunteering, and my department's getting ready to wrap things up and hand it off to the National Guard from Indiana, and we're ready to come home. I can't wait to go to the state fair and get back to my life.
Sergeant Harris, thanks for joining us today, and congratulations on your volunteering over in Kuwait.
Thank you so much.
That was Sergeant Michael Harris, part of the 34th Infantry Division, calling in from Kuwait on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Patrick Kelly, the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Director, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Tom, and thanks for having me.
Director, I get out there every few weeks, and glad the snow is gone and everything's cleaned up. Are there any construction projects going on this summer?
You know, probably the biggest one we have going on, we're doing some significant renovations in our mental health area. So it's really intended to create a little more room, you know, so some additional exam rooms for our doctors. And we are also expanding our number of inpatient beds from 24 to 30. And, you know, it's just one of those services that just keeps growing, and demand will be continue to be high. There's really not a lot of good resources available in our state. So it's something we're doing internally. But, you know, we always have sort of the fix-ups, the replacing the HVAC systems and all that kind of thing. But the biggest clinical improvement that's starting this summer, has already started actually, is this renovation of our mental health spaces.
Director, I think you've had that hard hat in your office ever since we met. There's always something going on, and improvements are great.
You know, it's kind of the state of healthcare these days, and so we are actually, today we're opening up a new ICU center over at Fort Snelling, and so, yeah, it's good. I mean, the VA has been very generous with Minneapolis and making sure we're staying current in our technology. So, yeah, it's there's always going to be the next thing.
Sir, and one of the next things, I understand you've got a pilot project coming up called the VA Health Chat.
You know, Tom, so younger veterans are looking for different ways to communicate with their doctor. So, you know, for years we've had something called My Healthy Vet, which many of your listeners will be familiar with, where you effectively go online and you get access, and you can then talk to your doctor or order prescriptions, get them refilled, you know, that kind of thing. This next technology that we're actually one of four pilot sites in the country. St. Cloud is another, where it's a digital mobile app where veterans can chat, and so that gives them the ability to have more of a real-time feedback related to questions they might have. You just saw your doctor, you're not quite sure your medications were right or that you got the right information. It's an ability to use a mobile app to communicate back to your clinic and to your care team. It's a six-month pilot now. But it shows great promise. And again, we know that younger veterans, this is how they communicate, and then they expect to be able to communicate with us. And so any veterans that are interested in this, as a practical matter, you know, we have a My Healthy Vet little desk always set up in our flag atrium. Next time you're at the medical center, if you stop by, they can give you all the details. But again, just another way for people to communicate real time. Try to not waste people's time, be respectful of their time. And so the mobile app started now. And so if those that are interested, if you're near the medical center, stop by and we'll get you hooked up.
Sir, I would guess that'd be good for routine communications, but probably not the right thing to use for emergencies.
Great point, Tom. So there's it's really a communication tool. And if veterans have anything that they need more urgently, you get on the phone. We have the call center that's available for those kinds of questions. If they're clinical questions, you know, that's a 24/7 line. So this is intended for the sort of maybe the less clinical and maybe more administrative type questions that they might have related to logistics, when they can get care, when they can get an appointment, how to make sure that they got the right meds through the mail, you know, that kind of thing. And so there's definitely a place for it, but it doesn't take the place of making sure that you either see your doctor when you need to or you get urgent care or emergency room care if you're really sick.
Sir, the last time you were on, you joined us in the studio, and we were talking about the Mission Act. Is there anything new to report on that?
Well, you know, we're a week into it, Tom, and so the sky didn't fall. You know, we were kind of worried about some of the new programs and technologies and all that we would be dealing with. One of the things that a lot of veterans are interested in is this issue of urgent care availability. And just a brief recap, you know, veterans in priority groups 1 through 6 get 3 visits without copays, and after that, you know, there's a $30 copay. Other veterans in priority groups 7 and 8, you know, would pay a $30 copay, but it is an opportunity to get care closer to where they live without authorization. So basically, you just go to an eligible urgent care center. So when we talked last, you know, we were in the process of signing up CVSs and Walgreens and Walmarts, and with the thought that, you know, these are in most communities and it'd be easier for veterans to know where they can go. Since then, we've signed up 78 in the state of Minnesota. Unfortunately, most of them are in the metro, but that's being expanded, so that's growing all the time. And if veterans want to know where they can get urgent care, what sites have signed up, if they go to our website at www.minneapolis.va.gov, there will be a listing right on the very first page. You can just click on it. It'll take you to a link, and that will show in the state of Minnesota and western Wisconsin where you can go and get urgent care, and it's going to be continuously updated so your listeners can see who's signed up, what's available in their area. And again, then they can go there without prior authorization. It's a good new benefit under the Mission Act. It's not fully ready for prime time, but it's a lot more ready than we talked last time we talked about this a week ago.
Very good, sir. We'll be looking forward to more updates, and I'd like to thank you for joining us again today.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We have one mention today. After proudly caring for almost 1,000 Minnesota veterans and their families since opening in 1994, the Minnesota Veterans Home in Laverne is celebrating its 25th anniversary this month. The home is proud to be a vital part of the Laverne community and offers an excellent option for skilled nursing care to veterans and their spouses, and also provides a great place to work for employees. To learn more about the home, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Ben Johnson, our Red Bull soldiers from Kuwait, Director Pat Kelly of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Talk about the My Story project at the VA and visit with Allianz Life, a yellow ribbon company, to see how they are supporting our troops. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.